All right, Alexander, let's take a look at what's going on in the UK. Boris is back. He's back at work at 10 Downing Street. I imagine he's working out of 10 Downing Street at the moment. And the UK has not fared too well with the CV crisis. But from what I understand, they are going to start opening things up in May. And once again, another kind of phased rollout of businesses. And we've also got the Brexit question, which kind of sits in the back of my head. What does all of this mean for Brexit? I've actually seen Nigel Farage doing a lot of videos from his home, or his country home, I guess. And he's also talking a lot about what the CV crisis means for Brexit. And he actually did a video where he said, and I'm paraphrasing, he said, we will, you know, the Brexit party and himself, Nigel Farage, will be, you know, broadcasting regularly to make sure that amidst this whole CV stuff that's going on, Brexit will remain on course. So what do you make of what's going on in the UK with the CV and with Brexit?
Now, can I just say, first of all, about Boris Johnson, I understand that he is back at work, but he's not apparently in Downing Street, or so I've heard. I gathered that he's in Chequers, which is the Prime Minister's country residence. Now, that's not, you know, a holiday home. It's got all the facilities that is necessary for the Prime Minister to work fully and functionally. He can have hold video conferences with ministers. He can communicate and talk to everybody he wants to. And he's already had a conversation with Donald Trump. So he is back at work, and he is able to carry out his work well from Chequers. I mean, we shouldn't actually attach too much significance to the fact that he's in Chequers and not in Downing Street. Now, can I just say that you said that the British response to CV had not been stellar, and you also said that the British seem to be moving towards reopening their economy in May. You're right about the first. We simply don't know about the second because the government is split. You have the hardliners who say that, you know, it's too early to relax and to go and start to take steps to reopen the economy. And there are ministers like Matt Hancock, who's the health minister, who are strongly arguing that position. And then there are others, like the Chancellor, Rishi Sunak, and the Cabinet Office Minister, Michael Gove, who, on the contrary, do want to see steps being taken to reopen the economy in May. But without Boris Johnson there to tell them what to do, and one thing that has become completely clear as crystal over the last few weeks is what a indominant Prime Minister he is, and the extent to which he is needed, the entire for the government machine to work. Without him, up to now, telling them what to do, we don't really know very much about what they're going to do. And the Britain, over the last 2 weeks, has appeared rudderless. There's been no very clear strategy about what to do going forward, either about how to handle the health crisis, which is ongoing, or how to take steps towards reopening the economy. And the other thing that's happened is that in his absence, the government has been losing control of the political narrative. So all sorts of people have been coming forward now and have been criticizing the way the government has handled this crisis. Some of those criticisms, by the way, I think are absolutely spot on, but, you know, we can come to that. But the fact is that without Johnson there, the government has not been responding effectively to those kinds of criticisms. So we have a very, very uncertain ship at the moment. Now, on top of all of that, as you rightly said, there is the overarching question of Brexit. There is a law in place in Britain which says that Britain must leave all the economic structures of the EU by the end of this year. That law was passed by Boris Johnson's government soon after he won the election. That is UK law. It's also important to remember that Britain has only left, as of now, the EU's political structures. So that we are part of, we're no longer part of the EU. We're no longer an EU member state. We are still tied to their economic structures. Now, Boris Johnson was very committed, is very committed, as far as we know, to leaving the EU, to the EU's economic structures by the end of this year. But in the period of his absence, all sorts of people have come forward and have been saying, well, look, we are now in a crisis of a different kind. This isn't the moment to do that. We've messed up because we didn't participate in a common plan that the EU had to buy protective clothing and equipment for our medical staff. That shows what a bad idea this is. So let's delay it. Let's find some way to postpone that for perhaps another year or 2 years or three or five or whatever. So it shows, to my mind, how important it is for Boris Johnson to come back and to take charge of a situation which in his absence has been spinning out of control.
Yeah, I was wondering if the CV is going to derail a Brexit, which, according to what you said, is heading inevitably towards a hard Brexit.
Yes.
A no-deal Brexit. Yeah. I mean, it's obvious. The EU is in no position to, no one's in a position to negotiate anything at this point.
No.
But it is law. And can they roll that back?
Well, I mean, in theory, they could. They could just pass another law cancelling the first law. But that would require a majority in the House of Commons and support from the government. So it really does depend very much on what the government decides to do. If the cabinet and the prime minister decide that there will be a postponement, there will be a postponement. What Nigel Farage is doing is he is reminding them that if they do that, there will be a severe political cost. Because, of course, the Brexit Party is still there. He is still there. The corona crisis isn't going to go on forever. And if they break their promise on this, he will be on the rampage again. And we saw how devastating he could be this time last year, when, if you remember, we still had Theresa May. It seems such a long time ago, but Theresa May was postponing the EU exit, the Brexit, completely. And it looked as if the can was going to be kicked down the road indefinitely. And Nigel Farage came back. And he formed his Brexit party, and the Conservatives were smashed in the European Parliament elections, and that galvanised the Conservative Party to dump Theresa May, bring in Boris Johnson, enabling Brexit to happen in January of this year. Now, one can so easily see this scenario repeating itself again. I'm going to say something. I mean, obviously, we have a health crisis in Britain. But those people who say that we should be postponing this decision because of the health crisis, because we need to protect the economy, need to remember that the economy is tanking anyway because of the health crisis and the lockdowns, and it's tanking in Europe too. So I don't really see what difference it makes and how it's, you justify it. You need to postpone Brexit in order to do it. We should be more concerned, it seems to me, about seeing this thing out of the way and done so that we can move forward with other things.
Yeah, I mean, I'm
that's my own personal view. I mean, I'd be astonished, by the way, if Johnson took a different line. But, we'll have to wait and see.
No, I can imagine that there'll be a lot of forces within the UK and in Europe that are going to use the CV in order to postpone the negotiations and to drag it out a year or two or even three. But I think you're spot on. You can make the argument, though, and I think it's a strong argument to the people of the UK, that you don't want to be, if there's any moment in history where you don't want to be attached to Europe, it's this moment right now, because if everything is sinking, the EU is a damn big ship that is sinking. You don't want to be anywhere near it. I mean, there may not even be a European Union in a year or two. So why even bother to negotiate with Brussels?
Well, exactly. I mean, it's exactly at exactly the moment when, as I say, anti-EU sentiment is crystallizing in Italy, and there is for the first time a movement in Italy, a real movement and grassroots support in Italy for Italy to quit the EU. You have the Europhiles in London once again back, once again trying to keep us in, this time through staying within the EU's economic structures. I mean, it seems a bizarre timing, actually, from a political point of view. I cannot imagine that Boris Johnson will agree to this. I think he understands perfectly well that his entire popularity is linked to the fact that he was the man who took Britain out of the EU. And I think if he starts backtracking on this, then frankly, he's already been, to some extent, damaged by his absence. As I said, he's been losing the narrative. He's losing the narrative. People are saying he was a complacent prime minister who didn't take the CV crisis seriously, who was skipping meetings. And he's the reason why we are in a mess. But if he, I think he's still very popular. But if he backtracks on Brexit, then, as I said, he will lose the support of his strongest supporters at the very same time that his opponents, both within the Conservative Party, and he has many, are circling. Can I just say, it's been very interesting to look at the Conservative media, the pro-supporting Conservative media, because it tells you a great deal about some of the things that are going on within the Conservative Party. The Daily Telegraph supports Johnson. The Times of London supports his primary enemy, Michael Gove, and is clearly manoeuvring to replace Johnson with Gove. Gove is, in theory, a Brexiter in the sense that he supported Brexit in the Brexit referendum. But afterwards, he gave the very clear impression that he wanted to stay within the EU's economic structures. So the fact that the Times, the London Times, is now very strongly criticizing Johnson and was the newspaper that disclosed the fact that he'd skipped five crisis meetings, tells you that there is a plot going on. I mean, you know, that's one of the things you need to be able to read the runes, as we say in Britain, very, very carefully. And there is clearly a plot going on. Now, if he comes back, I'm confident that he can reassert his authority, straighten the ship, head again for Brexit, the economic Brexit at the end of December, risk, if you like, the risks of a no-deal Brexit. And I don't think there is enough strength on the factional opposition within the Conservative Party to derail him. But if he doesn't, if he dithers, his enemies within the Conservative Party are gathering. And of course, Nigel Farage is coming back. So I'm personally absolutely clear politically about what he needs to do. I hope that his illness hasn't, fuddled his political antenna and his, wits. And he understands that. I think he does, but we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, with every country going up in flames, it seems, I think that there is a tendency to look within, and I think more sovereignty is the answer to dealing with the CV, less sovereignty. And can you quickly comment on Labour as well? Keir Starmer, the new leader, where is he? What's he doing?
Right. Let me just comment on this. I mean, one of the interesting things is that Johnson, who is, of course, the prime minister who delivered Brexit, has never been more popular. I mean, he's coming in for all this criticism. The, as I said, sections of the Conservative media have been criticizing him. Parts of the, that he's coming in for a great deal of criticism. And there's a general acceptance, I think, across the country that things have not been handled terribly well. But he is polling at over 50% popularity, which is extraordinary. Now, I think the reason is because he gained a huge amount of popularity before the CV crisis came, because he was the man who delivered Brexit. If he backtracks on that, then he risks his popularity with the people. And I think that's something he needs to understand. And I hope he does understand. So, but talking about what you just said, the fact that people are supporting Johnson, the fact that they are still supporting Brexit, does tend to support the theory, which I don't think it's a theory, I think it's a fact, which we're seeing all over the place, that the response to CV is that countries are pulling into themselves and are responding by themselves. I think that is the mood in Britain. I think it's the mood pretty much everywhere. And it is reinforcing the Brexit current. As of the Labour Party, well, they picked the most fervid anti-Brexiteer, the most fervid Europhile in Keir Starmer they could have possibly had. I mean, they have now become, effectively, it seems to me, a Remain party, even though Remain lost them the election and lost them those 55 seats. But, you know, some people just won't learn. And he has been completely ineffectual. They are actually less popular now than they were at the time of the election, their election defeat. I mean, it's one of the bizarre things. I mean, you know, I know Corbyn comes in for a great deal of criticism, but he actually came very close to winning the election in 2017. And in 2019, he was hobbled by a policy which he hadn't wanted, which is this crazy second referendum policy that was foisted on him. And even then, he was able to keep the Labour vote up to around a third of the electorate. They're now polling under 30%. They're actually falling back. So, you know, it's this extraordinary disjunction between what you read in the media, which hated Corbyn, doesn't like Brexit, doesn't particularly like Johnson either, and what actually British people across the country are really thinking and saying. It's very weird. And, you know, there was Starmer today that we're doing this video. He did his first performance in the House of Commons. He was up against not Johnson, but Dominic Raab, who has been Johnson's stand-in at Prime Minister's Questions. And I'm reading, you know, again, in all the places which support Starmer, the Eurofarm newspapers, places like The Guardian, about how well Starmer did. I watched it. I nearly fell asleep. I thought it was completely boring. And I think most people will find it so. So, you know, it seems to me that the Europhile bubble within which the Labour Party seems to be trapped sees one world, and I, listening to what people in Britain tell me, see a completely different one. And all I can say is the world that I see is the one that the opinion polls tell me is the right one. And the opinion polls are heading in only one direction. It astonishes me that, you know, they don't see that. So I'm afraid, I think Johnson has quite a few things to worry about. The Labour Party isn't one of them.
Yeah, everyone's moving away from the EU. I don't understand why they picked a guy that wants to move the UK back into the EU. Odd.
And the man who came up with the second referendum policy, which lost them the election. I mean, it seems most bizarre to me. I mean, you know, it wasn't as if they didn't have alternatives. I mean, there were other people there. There were other potential candidates who I think could have done a lot better. But they picked on that one. I mean, most old.
Yeah. I mean, Corbyn's downfall was the fact that he didn't stick to his guns.
Yes.
And, you know, get out of the EU. I mean, that's what he stood for. He didn't want to be in the EU. His downfall was the fact that he moved closer to the EU.
I mean, we've discussed it exhaustively in many programs. I mean, he was pushed by Starmer and people like Starmer within the Labour Party into taking a pro-EU position. Let's be absolutely clear. I mean, the second referendum policy was about keeping Britain in the EU. That was what it was all about. And he knew it was a bad idea, but he was far too weak to stand up to it. And it lost him the election. But even then, as I said, he kept a third. He still won a third of the vote. A fact which, by the way, people then seem to be prepared to take on board. But, you know, he won more than the Labour Party did in any election, in any of the two elections which happened before he became leader. He won more than Blair did. He won more votes than Blair did in the 2005 election, which Blair supposedly won. People always forget this about Corbyn. But he lost in the end because Johnson had a more popular policy than he did, which was taking Britain out of the EU. So what do? You double down on the policy that loses you the election by picking the man who opposed Brexit and maneuvered you into the policy of opposing it. I mean, it seems very bizarre to me, but, you know, Labour Party, I don't understand their politics anymore. They seem to make no sense to me. But as I come back to what I said, I think in terms of British politics at the moment, they're a total irrelevance.
All right. Alexander McCurse, Editor-in-Chief of The Duran. Thank you very much, guys. If you liked this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Smash that like. And also go to our SoundCloud and iTunes page. Follow us there to get an audio copy of this video as well. And please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon. And we are also on Subscribestar. Your donation really helps out a lot. Go to the Duran shop, pick up some merchandise, magic mugs, polo shirts, and all kinds of great merchandise. And also go to our friends at the Patriotic Legacy and pick up a Patreon beacon. They have a contest running for the Patreon Beacon 3, which is coming out in red. Great flashlight or great torch. Since we are doing a video on the UK, it is called a torch in Britain. And the contest, Alexander, is one Patriot Beacon Red, $99 value, one tactical pen, $19.99 value, and one monkey fist ball, $4.95 value. When you purchase anything from Patriotic Legacy with the Duran code 20, which also gives you a 20% discount, you will be automatically entered into that contest, and we will announce the winner very, very soon. Great gifts from our friends at the Patriotic Legacy, Alexander.
Indeed, sir. And can I just say, I mean, that's a contest you must participate in, because this is the best torch or flashlight, as our friends say, you can have. I mean, it is the best torch I have ever had. And I always have to have a torch because, if I may say, my night vision is not great. So I have to wear special glasses when I'm driving at night, which I love to do, by the way. I love driving. But I also have to wear special glasses when I'm out walking with my dogs. And of course, you have the lights of your car. And when you're walking your dogs at night in dark places, as I have to do, you can't have a better torch than this. This is an absolutely amazing torch. I was walking with my wife just the other day, and I showed her the absolute reach of this torch, how far and how well you could see. And she was stunned. She said, it's absolutely amazing. It's the sort of torch which I can imagine rescue teams using. In fact, I'm sure they do. I mean, it's that good. It is a phenomenal torch. It has all kinds of other things which I love about it. Firstly, it doesn't use batteries. It's solar powered. So you don't have to worry about it running out of power when you need it most, because it provided you keep it in the light, in the sun, it's always there ready for you. It's got a magnet. So if you put it in your car, which I do, you find a metal place, you could stick it there, and it's absolutely safe to keep there. And you don't have to worry about it. And you have it immediately to hand. If you are driving with it, and whenever I drive now, I always drive with my Patriot Beacon. Well, it's got all sorts of useful things you could need if you are in a car. It's got a compass. Obviously, we have sat navs, but, you know, sat navs don't always work very well. I was once caught in Germany on a dark night when the sat nav crashed and all the roads were closed and we weren't diversions. I didn't know where north or south was. No risk of that now, because your Patriot Beacon will tell you exactly where you are. And of course, if you're walking in the woods with my dogs And as I happen to be quite often at night or in the day, well, there's the compass to keep you on your proper course. It's got a port so that, you know, if you have your iPad or your iPhone or your smartphone or your laptop and it needs power, well, you can recharge, because as I said, this thing doesn't run out provided you keep it in the light. And of course, if perish the thought, you have an accident in your car, well, you can smash the windscreen. You can see that it does that for you. And you can cut your seatbelt if you need to get out. So it's got all the things you could possibly need. It's also got one thing which perhaps you can see, but it is wonderfully well made. It is incredibly strong. It's, I'd say, almost indestructible. It has that quality of certain things, certain products the US makes, which you just hold it and you feel the quality just by holding it. And that is a wonderful sign of a really great product. So the best torch or flashlight you can have. And if there's a contest going on, well, you must join that contest because you shouldn't be without it. I'm going to finish with the very last thing that it does, which I absolutely love. You press it, you get the alarm, and it calls my dogs, who are at this moment in time at the top of the house with my wife, fast asleep. When I'm out at night and I need to bring them back, I press that and hit, and there they come. So you can't be without your Patriot Beacon. Join the contest. You will be thrilled if you buy or own one of these things. I say that without any hesitation at all. Don't forget our own amazing products. We have our marvelous Duran mugs, which I've often spoken about. I've explained that I'm the world expert on mugs, having owned hundreds and thousands and scores of them. And I should also add that I drank champagne out of one of them on Easter Day. You know, when we break our fast, in this is the Orthodox people do, when Christ is risen, well, that's what we do. We drink, we toast each other. And I toasted my wife with my Duran mug, and it was brimming with champagne, and it was marvelous. So we also have, as well as our wonderful magic mugs, we have our wonderful Duran magic, wonderful, amazing, extraordinary, prodigious, remarkable shirts, 100% cotton. The polo shirt that I'm wearing now is the best polo shirt you will ever have. And I'm, again, an expert on the subject of polo shirts. I should know, 100% cotton. Embroidered there, you can see it, the double-headed eagle of the Duran. You will look phenomenal wherever you are wearing one. And also, we don't just have polo shirts, we have t-shirts, also 100% cotton, short-sleeved, long-sleeved, v-neck shirts. We also have hats, hoodies, and stickers. We also have fascinatingly good ebooks. We've added one on the oil price crash, which you will find to the other ones we have on Russiagate, Ukrainegate, Brexit, and Epstein. So participate in the contest. Come to our shop. Support the Duran. Buy yourself a Patriot Beacon. Alex will tell you how to do all these things.
You will find everything in the description box down below. The Patriotic Legacy link for the Patriot Beacon is there with the Duran 20 code. And, of course, the duranshop.com. Alexander Mercurius, thank you very much. Until next time, everybody, take care.